Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling, Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. Online, that's bcfmradio.com. This week, whatever happened to DERA? That's the Defence Evaluation and Research Agency, where the government controls research into weapons. US Naval Intelligence veteran Kenyon Gibson explains he believes that the Americans took it over for a purpose. Also, down to Avonmouth and the merchant venturers Lord of the Flies. Well, that's what some of the people think they are down there, what with the waste problem over the last few years. And waste contracts, we get a look at those beyond the public view with Ian Robinson. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk. And if you want to join in, contact the People's Republic of Stokescroft, just off Jamaica Street on 0117 909 6897. If you want to volunteer, go through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733. One word, volunteerbristol.org.uk, or the national do-it.org. Volunteering site, and I'll repeat those details at the end of the show. Right, well, I'm joined on the line from New York City by Kenyon Gibson, writer and investigator campaigner, I suppose we call you, Kenyon. Just tell us first of all about your scribblings, your campaigning on hemp.
Well, that was a long-term labor of love, writing on industrial hemp. We got a lot of people involved. Woody Harrelson wrote the foreword. My sister Mina Haygood wrote about textiles. Paul Benham from the UK wrote about a number of issues. Sam Heslop from the UK and Cindy and Nick McIntosh.
And why hemp? Why did you fix on hemp to write a book about?
Because it's good for the economy, it's good for America, it's good for the world, and it's been suppressed, mainly in the United States, because it was competition for DuPont fibers. And it's been lumped in with pot, which it doesn't have to be, because if it doesn't have the THC variety, then it's not pot, it's just a very good fiber that we need for the economy.
Since then, you've been investigating politicians. How did that come about?
Well, I kind of started young. I was interested in the fusion of the Abwehr into the CIA. I'm from a U.S. military family. Intel intrigued me.
Okay, what was the Abwehr? This is World War II, isn't it?
Well, the Abwehr was the German intelligence wing, and what happened was the Abwehr agents basically made their way into the CIA and escaped the Nuremberg trials. So they played a major part in things behind the scenes all over the world.
Amazing.
Especially.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of rumors about this, but what sort of scale was this done on? Can you point to any specific figures?
It was done on a large scale, and I think that's so in the public domain that anybody with a Google search is going to find this out. But the General Hans Kammler, who was in charge of the secret weapons, he never went to Nuremberg. He just kind of disappeared, presumably coming to the U.S. The U.S. took a lot of rocket scientists like Wernher von Braun into their system. And a lot of these agents, you know, are not – you don't know their names, but they pop up here and there.
But, I mean, isn't that legitimate to a certain extent? I mean, you know, not long after World War II, the U.S. and Britain were fighting a Cold War, weren't they? And these were the experts, many of them from the Eastern Front, on the Soviets.
Well, what happened with the Cold War thing was, and actually Britain was a victim of this, the Nazis, you know, came to America, which was Russia's ally. My grandfather was in the war, and he knew Russian generals, and they were friends and all. The Abwehr didn't like this, so they got McCarthy and other Americans to turn against Russia, start witch hunts, and blacklist a lot of actors and left-wing people. And also they wanted to turn against Britain, which wasn't so easy, but as I hope you'll let me elaborate on, there was a lot of secret activity against Britain, and we'll see that into DeLorean, into the sale of the gold, some things that Tony Blair did, and that is like the later day Abwehr, or the later influence. You know, Abwehr was involved with people like Prescott Bush, and then you had Bush Senior and then Bush Junior. So
go into some of that. Kinetic, and what else did you say? DeLorean? Force of the sale of gold. Go one by one through those, please, Kenyon.
Okay, we'll go chronologically here. DeLorean was a company for which the British government gave 400 pounds to a guy, to an American named John DeLorean, who later claimed he was CIA. We don't know if that's true. We do know he was a drug dealer. He also claimed to be a Christian, and let's debunk his Christianity as, you know, Christian, you can't be a drug dealer and be a Christian. So DeLorean got £400 million on the premise that he was going to do cars with no paint job in Ireland, and everybody was going to make lots of money, lots of jobs, lots of tax base. He spent about £200 million and disappeared back to America with the other £200 million. At that time, I was, let's say, a teenager. I was young, and I would hang out with people who had Intel experience, given my own military family and my own presence in the U.S. Navy. I could talk to a lot of people, and they would be very open with me and say, yeah, we're doing these things, and, you know, we've got secret plans around the world and stuff like this. And they took a delight in it. They were bragging, you know. So I had a lot of that information coming my way. And let's see, we were DeLorean, we were Kinetic, we were Sale of the Gold. Kinetic happened before the Sale of the Gold, let's say, or no, it was slightly after.
So now, Kinetic is the privatized version of what was effectively the research arm of the British military. So there were quite a lot of places around Britain which were used for military research, which obviously, you know, should be supervised directly by the Ministry of Defence. And then that was kind of privatised into this organisation, Kinetic, who now it's a private business that is doing a lot of the military research for the UK, which doesn't sit all that well, does it? A private business has got different interests to the state sometimes.
Well, what happened is you've given me I mean, that's very well put, and thank you for the background information on that. What happened with Kinetic was the company was worth a lot of money and employed a lot of British people out in Wales. A guy named George Bush came along and wanted to buy it through his company, the largest private company in the world, Carlyle. And it should never have been sold to a foreigner. You know, few countries will sell defense firms to a foreigner. They had non-hostile bidding, meaning that only George Bush could bid on this. Blair allowed that to happen. Bush bought it for £40 million, and he either sold it or it was later valued at £335 million. He shed 400 British jobs, and a subsidiary of Kinetic is called Cyvalence, which ended up, I found it first spying on my hemp site when I said that there should be a third party, a centrist party in the United States. Cyvalence was all over my site on one of my smallest posts. I got about 1,000 hits out of nowhere. A lot of people were very worried just because I said there could be a third party in the United States, and I'm not even, you know, I was just kind of joking around. I said that. So Cyvalence, people think, is a British company, and they think, oh, the Brits are spying on us. That's not true. George Bush is spying on you. That was also another reason for buying the company, other than a long and prolonged campaign against Britain that the Avver started and that he is now continuing along with other politicians. And I hope we can segue quickly to Clinton, who people think is on the opposite side of the fence. But no, that's not true. The Clintons and the Bushes are happy to work together.
Let's go back to Kinetic, though, and these subjects before we get into that, because, I mean, you've been in, you work, I think it was, am I right in saying that you were working for the US Navy? And so you've had quite an interesting insight, more than almost anyone else I've ever heard from, actually, Kenyon, into what operations were being run from the US, by the US, against Britain.
Well, let's put it this way. It's not the U.S. people against the British people. There's a small shadow government or shadow group of criminals within the U.S. And if you could break the U.S. intel groups into three branches, genuine military intel, who are guys like, you know, David sitting next to me, who knew how to defuse bombs in a minefield, and they're just out to, you know, win the battle and save lives. And they're not into all this political stuff. They're not making any money off it. Then you have the CIA, NSA, and other companies that became dinosaurs when the CIA botched the Bay of Pigs. And then a third group, the private intel groups. Now, right now, private intel groups such as Jellyfish, which used to be called Blackwater, are causing a lot of trouble in the world so that private companies can then go in, use taxpayer money, and rebuild, as a dodgy figure in London told me he wants to make a mini Halliburton, in other words, a lot of money out of this. So it's not a war between the U.S. and the U.K. I don't want to go there or make any exaggerations, but there are a number of parties in the U.S. who previously, you know, generations ago or decades ago had ties to the Avver, and are continuing the trend of attacking the United Kingdom through the Sale of the Gold, Kinetic, DeLorean, the extradition of Ian Norris, which was a story that got secretly taken out of the press when I went to the Independent with it, and trying to set a precedent of being able to actually extradite British citizens who have not committed a crime. Ian Norris had not committed a crime. What he did, what would have been illegal if he'd done it in the U.S., he wasn't in the U.S. The precedent was set. Politicians were bribed. Boris Johnson started to make some noise, but then backed out. I was listening to both sides. I was able to get information on this that no one had. I went to the press. I got a wonderful reporter named Genevieve Roberts to do a story and told her possibly the story would not run because I was being followed around London by a dodgy person from New York, and ultimately the story didn't run. And so Ian Norris ended up being extradited for legal acts that he committed as a British citizen, which were completely legal. The problem is that Carlyle had bought his company too. He was CEO of Morgan Crucible, which made car parts. And this was one of the biggest scandals in British history, Tony. And when I was calling reporters, I would tell them that this. I would tell them, look, I'm from the U.S. Is it right that I'm more concerned about British rights and British sovereignty and British citizens than you, a British citizen, are? And I goaded enough reporters to finally one day, Sean Poulter, just had to concede that, hey, you know, you're right, mate.
Well, so we had Justin Walker on this show just a few weeks ago, Kenyon, and he's the nephew of one of the directors of the Bank of England in the 1950s through to the 1970s, whose name is Pilkington, Harry Pilkington, Sir Harry Pilkington, in fact.
Okay.
And his uncle told him, he said, well, I'm going to give you two bits of advice. And he was only 16 years old at the time. He said, don't believe anything you read in the newspapers because we control them here in Britain. And the other piece of advice is don't believe politicians when they say they can do things because they can't unless we tell them to.
As you know, we spent time together. We were on TV together. I spent 12 years in Britain, and I was trying to alert the press, and I was getting stonewalled. It was only a few reporters, such as yourself, Sean Poulter, who wasn't even an investigative journalist. He's a consumer affairs guy, but somehow I got him on the phone, and he took the time to listen to me. And the Daily Mail, his paper, ended up giving 9 pages over to the Pentagon hacker Gary McKinnon story on the 3rd of June 2009. Genevieve Roberts tried very hard. She ran that story. She got that story in The Independent, but later had that and another story taken away from her. I understand she's written something about the KKK, which they've refused to print where she's working, or maybe just didn't see fit to print. But
I imagine a lot of this stuff, of course, is coming out on the internet because journalists like me are writing things. I mean, I wrote an article just a few weeks ago about Canadian intelligence aiding, basically doing recruitment for ISIS, that is to say bringing British school children, 15 and 16 years old even, over to Turkey, to Istanbul, and then seeing them down into, on the bus from Istanbul down into the Syrian border, taking them across to see ISIS, delivering them there, effectively doing recruitment. And the Turkish police had discovered that at least 150 people had been recruited for ISIS by Canadian intelligence in this way, and yet nobody in Britain actually in many other places really wants to know about this, even though it's the factual story, which has all got evidence. So we've got a serious problem with our press, definitely. Certainly over here, I think you've got a bit of a problem in the States with the mass media too. But let's just get back to Blackwater for a second, because you talked about them as jellyfish. They also had another name, XE. But the name Blackwater, even though it's supposed to be Eric Prinz, who's an American's firm, Blackwater is, in fact, a little town, and it's right close to the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst. It's over here, Blackwater. So I wonder whether actually the Brits have got more of a role in this kind of privatisation of war than they admit to.
Well, let me be very specific, and I'm going to out this for the first time publicly. I've tried to out it. A couple papers got very scared and backed off. But you remember a few years ago, I confided to you, Tony, that when David Rowan was editor of Jewish Chronicle, I went undercover infiltrating fascist groups, including the New Right, in the United Kingdom. And, you know, a couple of your mates, Nigel Copsey and John Richardson from universities, have written a book called British Fascism. Came out in 2015. I mentioned in it as speaking at the New Right, so nobody can debunk this. One of the figures in the New Right, a guy named Jonathan Bolter, who's a Satanist and a hardcore sexual sadist.
I mean, have you got evidence for that, though, Kenyon?
Yeah, I've got 1,000 emails. I printed them out. I'm showing them. And the irony is I'm talking to Jonathan to this present day, because Jonathan talks about things. He trusts me implicitly because my role as an infiltrator, I think I've done a good job. He's trusted me to the point of introducing me to the president of Jellyfish, Michael Bagley, who's an American, who's never been in the military. Michael Bagley is not military intelligence. I have respect for military intelligence. Private intelligence is a completely different thing. Now, what he is, He set up the operations in Syria. He got a State Department via Clinton. He got an override of the executive order allowing him as an American citizen not only to go to Syria and do business, but to set up a phony refugee camp, set up a company called Abashi. Abashi, I believe that's A-B-A-S-H-I. He was bragging about this. He showed me the documents a couple years ago when we met in Penn Station. I have the emails to back it up that I really met this guy, other emails, even old emails from his previous employer, OpsInt, Operations Intelligence. And basically, you know, corresponding over the years with Jonathan Boulter and Michael Bagley, you know, the plan is, as Jonathan Boulter points out, is to create a mini Halliburton in Syria. Now, Donald Trump was saying, why aren't the Americans bombing ISIS? Well, you've just gone into a whole tangent about, you know, dodgy intelligence forces creating an ISIS. And the Russians came along and said, you know, ISIS is a bunch of terrorists. Let's go after ISIS. So that caused a row. Clinton jumped in and started viciously attacking Russia. Now the whole situation is a mess. I think, you know, it's just very hard to control. But basically, this was started so that Bagley and Boulter and other people could make a lot of money with Clinton backing. And specifically, even though Jonathan Boulter is a right-wing guy and very tight, you know, he's trying to get up to the Trump organization. Trump wants nothing to do with his people. And he confides to me that Clinton has been in Syria all along and will be there, and if you get investors, we'll have Clinton on our side. Well, Clinton is here, there, and everywhere, including, and this touches on something we did together. We were on Press TV together, so you can vouch for me that, yes, I was there on Iranian-sponsored TV. I was also on Iranian TV on September 11th, 2008. I was talking to Iranian agents, and they were telling me how much they love Clinton. She would do this, she would do that for them. I didn't pay it much. She wasn't nominated for president. I thought the whole thing would blow over, but when she became Secretary of State, she did a lot for them, and it's very, very serious. This woman is a traitor. She is allowing the Iranian agents to go into South America, decimate South American countries, and get the uranium and lithium-6 and other things out of South American countries.
I mean, I thought actually mostly it was the CIA that were messing around in South America.
Well, let me be specific there. The CIA botched the job so badly. There was the death of Yvonne Hain, which everybody had suspicions about. Nobody really believes it was a suicide. That was December 2011, the finance minister of Argentina. There was another death of Antonio Escobar, also Argentinian, who died in Bolivia. Nobody believes that was a suicide. It was completely botched. The CIA is not really efficient. The CIA supposedly should be trying to get Iran out, but even if that's what they're doing, and they're so inefficient, they couldn't if they tried. Iran has played its hand very patiently, let the West let people make mistakes, and then gotten in there even when they weren't so welcome. And you know, Bolivia is a wonderful country. I warned them about the assassination attempt in 2009 because I heard about that at the New Right as well. Adrian Davies, QC, the barrister who defended Holocaust denier David Irving, he was going secretly to Bolivia, and I told the Bolivian military attaché in London about that in 2009. Since then, I've liaised with the Bolivians. They're great people. I think Evo Morales is doing a wonderful job. And ironically, Trump is looking to reach out to him and give him respect and build bridges.
Getting back to Syria for a minute, I mean, there was the amazing announcement 3 or 4 years ago on French television by the former French foreign minister under Sarkozy, Roland Dumas, saying that he'd been in London in 2009 and he'd been approached by British officials. This is when he was the foreign minister of France, so saying, we're planning an armed uprising in Syria. Do you want to join us? And he said, no, I don't, thank you. But it does make you wonder who these officials are. I mean, potentially government officials of some sort who are planning armed uprisings in foreign countries.
A lot of people are running around as officials. This Jonathan Boulter guy claims to be part of Propaganda Due, which was outlawed after the death of Roberto Calvi on Blackfriars Bridge. He does have serious ties, though, and he is alleged to be MI5, but I think he just tells people that. Leo Zagami outed him some years ago on the Greg Shkimansky site, also mentioned his tendency for sexual sadism. The thing is, I think that a lot of people are claiming to be British intelligence through the outfits like the New Right, and I know that certain Western intel agencies use British patsies so that if anybody gets caught, like they were trying to instigate trouble in Argentina using people who are presumably British to create a rift between Argentina and Britain that nobody needs.
Anybody can see now, certainly since the illegal invasion of Iraq in 2003, there's a total mess behind the scenes going on when it comes to foreign policy. What do you put this down to? What do you think is really like? Who is really running things at that point?
Well, the Clintons, people like Michael Bagley, and Michael Bagley is actually a mercenary. He's not the top money man, but he's doing the job for the money man, and he's not a military man. As he told me, look, he's out to make money for himself, which is fine, but which isn't fine when you're going into Syria and people are getting killed.
Well, so, I know. So I mean, the problem here is that you've got a massive profit motive, haven't you, behind war nowadays, and without much checks and balances from the traditional, like the Foreign Office, State Department, diplomatic service.
Absolutely, Tony. You've hit it right on the head, and that's why people like you are getting suppressed. That's why Jean-Pierre Roberts would do an article on Ian Norris or the KKK and not have it published, or my article that I pitched to her last month, and you know, though she tried it, just wasn't published. And the massive money, as you just said, massive money behind what the Americans call the military-industrial complex. What General and then later President Eisenhower warned the American people about when he resigned from the White House. The military-industrial complex. It's a secret organization run by a lot of former Nazis, Bushes and Clintons, and then they have these private intel firms like Blackwater, and then they recruit. They go into neo-Nazi fascist groups to do some of the dirty work. They in turn liaise with Muslim terrorist groups, Iranians, things like that. And we have a mess on our hands, and right now it's leading up to a war with Russia with a dodgy character who by the way, liaises with the sexual sadist Jonathan Boulter, called Joel Harding. Have you heard of Joel Harding?
Never heard of him, no. These are some of the interesting characters it'd be great to hear a bit more about from you.
Joel Harding, he claims to have retired a general, but nobody really knows what rank he was definitely in the U.S. Army, and he was an officer after being an enlisted man. He is a cyber warrior who is going against Russia, and he advises the Ukrainians. And some of the things he advises are so scary. They're so anti-American. Basically, he's advised the Ukrainian government something like this, that if you criticize the Ukrainian government, you're an enemy combatant, you're a terrorist, and under his definitions, quite a number of journalists. This is very scary. You ought to Google it right now, to have your people Google Joel Harding, and I think Global Research did a lengthy article about him. I think other left-wing papers have done articles about him. He is advocating basically that, you know, if you or I as a journalist criticize the people that he's working with, that we're terrorists. That's where he's going, and he's advised the Ukrainians to do a number of things, including blowing up pipelines so as to hurt Russia. So Joel is like another McCarthy, except I think he's a very sick man. Anybody having anything to do with Jonathan Boulter is very sick. I can send you over emails where Jonathan Boulter is asking you to infiltrate the church to find young girls for spanking parties. Okay, so we don't need Michael Bagley and Joel Harding hanging out with Jonathan Boulter. People like that are just sick, and what they want to do, and with the Clintons, is take us to war with Russia. That's why I have so much black support here, because, you know, there's a black officer who overheard something that Clinton was saying about, you know, if there's a war, she didn't care if black people died. So the Black Lives Matter issue is right here with me. I mean, I've got support, you know, right here. I walk out the door, black people on my block know me for having, you know, worked with them before, and they don't want this war. And that's why you're getting black people like you might want to Google this, too. Maybe you know it already. But E.T. Williams, doctor of common sense. He's an African-American who's supporting Trump.
Do you want to just plug your book, give people an idea of whereabouts they can go online and find more of your stuff?
Okay, well, if they have an interest in industrial hemp, which I think is a lot nicer topic.
Just
than,
say, if you can say, if you have an interest in
industrial. If you have an interest in industrial hemp, which is a lot nicer topic, you won't find so many Nazis perversions and themes mentioned in that book. You'll find a nice foreword by Woody Harrelson. You can go to my sister's site, www.mineaware.com, MINAWEAR.com, and you'll see a lot of products. She does yoga pants right now, and she has the stock of the book for anyone who wants it. So you can order it from her. Pleasure
Cheers.
To talk to you, Tony.
All
the
right.
best.
God, Thanks,
God
Kenyon.
Bless, God bless the United Kingdom.
And God bless the United States of America.
Thank you, Tony.
And you, Kenyon. All right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
And I'm joined by Ian Robinson from Avonmouth. Hi, Ian. Welcome to Dialect.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, you live very close to the port, so we're going to come to you and ask you about all. There's lots going on down there. Various things to do with the local MP, Charlotte Leslie, who seems to be at odds with some of the residents.
Yeah, there are a number of residents that don't really get on with Charlotte, it must be said.
Am I right in saying that there was actually some money was paid by the Bristol Port Company to Charlotte Leslie as a sort of... And actually it was questioned as to whether it was appropriate, seen almost like a bribe.
Don't know about the legality of it being a bribe, but I do understand that she was pulled up before the select committee in the House of Commons.
Right, yeah, standards, I think parliamentary standards, yeah. Because it wasn't declared, and so she did declare it finally. She said, oh, okay, yes, they did pay me this. I think it was maybe because she was a fairly new MP and she didn't really know, but the fact is that there's a lot of problems with the port at the moment down there. I mean, we've got the possibility, for example, of a deep water terminal being built, and obviously people in Avonmouth need to know if that's happening or not.
Indeed. As far as I'm aware, it will be happening at some point. There are some possible issues with raising the finance from China. I believe Shangzhou was where Mr. Ferguson was jetting off to quite frequently to arrange that kind of thing.
Now, the fact of the matter is that ships are getting bigger and bigger. That means they've got a bigger and bigger draft. That's, you know, the amount below the waterline. And all over the world, there are these deeper water ports being built. But the fact of the matter is we've got a very high... when the high tides are in Avonmouth, you can pretty much get anything in there, can't you?
I don't know if it will accept the deepest. I mean, the reason they want to build it is purely for the fact that the entrance to the dock is quite narrow, so you wouldn't be able to get the massive ships in, which they want to bring over. And as you say, the draft is a little too high, so they've got to scoop out the bottom of the riverbed, so to speak.
Now, just put me straight on this. Portbury and Avonmouth are two different docks, are they, but part of the same business?
Yes, yeah, two different docks either side of the River Avon, but both owned by...
So Portbury's on the south side, is
yep.
that right? And
yep.
Avonmouth's on the north side. Avonmouth's the old one, Portbury's the new one.
Correct, yeah.
My goodness, amazing, I got it right. Also, I was looking recently into the whole possibility of using tidal power, actually, as the Gloucestershire Surveyor was back in the mid-1800s. Still nothing's happened, but we've got an amazing, real gift from Mother Nature in the Bristol Channel and around Avonmouth, where we've got 50 feet up and down the tide goes every day. It's one of the highest in the whole world. In fact, the highest, along with the Bay of Fundy in Canada. And that's 15 metres a day, in and out, in and out. That could be generating power. The barrage is one thing that many people have talked about over the years, to stretch across from Somerset or from Gloucestershire over to Wales. So what's the state of play with that? Is it, as I understand it, in 2010 when we got a new government, they were considering it again, but no, they decided not to.
I believe Ms. Leslie was involved in that decision. She raised some questions in the Houses of Parliament about it. I believe also that the Severn is the second fastest tide in the world after the Amazon. I could be wrong. But
no, I think it's actually, I was looking this up, it's the Bay of Fundy in Canada, which is right near Newfoundland. In fact, it's part of the place, amazingly, in 1497... Actually, I think it might be 1498 because he did two trips. John Cabot sailed over there in the Matthew, and it's pretty much where he went. So quite amazing that he should go from one place in one part of the world to another place in another part of the world, which were the two highest amounts of potential for generating tidal power. So are we going to see a barrage or not?
Very doubtful, as I understand it. It's been kiboshed even for the economic impact to the Port of Bristol, strangely enough.
What about the flies? 2011, yeah. 2012,
2013, 2014, yeah. 2015, and 2016.
Just take us back. What was causing the fly plague?
The energy from waste industry. There were a couple of players in there. You've got Bumico. You had a company called EGNI International, and what they do, and of course Newer Solutions, they package up local authority waste And they bale it and they send it to Sweden to burn it. The conservative local councillor, a guy at the time called Wayne Harvey, was also our local councillor, and he was an employee of the dock, and he was also appointed by Bristol City Council as the non-executive director for the Bristol Port, because as a shareholder, Bristol City Council have a non-executive director that sits on the port board and supposedly makes them obey the law.
Now, there were raids, weren't there, by the Environment Agency to find out what was causing this pollution, amongst other things, and they discovered quite a lot of stuff they didn't really like. But has there been any prosecution?
I believe you're indicating towards the raids on Cherngold. Now, Cherngold remediation, they do things like remediate asbestos-laden grounds, chemical-laden grounds, but they were also branching out into the RDF business.
The fly business, yeah.
Yeah,
and I can imagine how people in Avonmouth think that that's what they were doing. Because, I mean, the trouble is, a lot of this is all behind barbed wire. These companies are dealing with waste. They take that waste behind that barbed wire and then hope that no one knows anything about what's happening with it after that point.
They leave it there mouldering for months and months and months. The Environment Agency, when they finally tracked part of the issue down to Cherngold and part of it to... Cherngold was the first year they investigated. The Pete Green, I think his name is the Environment Agency manager for the Southwest, and he said he'd never ever seen that amount of fly cases in his life. It was absolutely rank over there.
Okay, so what about one of the things that we remember from George Ferguson, the former Merchant Venturers mayor's time when the port was sold, was the apparent cheap price that they got it for, which was owned by Bristol City Council. And I think quite a lot of people are now looking at the departing mayor, Mayor Ferguson, and saying, well, he managed to sneak that in just before he got booted out by the public. Now, did we, as Bristol City Council voters and residents, did we get value for money?
Absolutely not. We were ripped right off. George Ferguson.
Okay, so how? Okay, you'd have to say then, how much was the Bristol Port land worth? How much of it was there, and how much did we get for it?
I believe we got £10 million for the port, and we still retain, I believe it's 5% or a number of percentage points in the ownership of the port. However, you've only got to look at what the land's planned for. You've got Access 18 that are redeveloping the land and flogging off things to ASDA and a number of other institutions.
So who are these people?
Access 18, I believe they're based out of the Channel Islands. I could be wrong.
Oh, right. Well, that's a sort of dodgy tax haven people coming in, isn't it?
I believe they bought the entire estate within Avonmouth that they operate from for £1. And that's now being redeveloped for massive business. Now, I'm aware that Mr. Ferguson and some of the people we were dealing with have set up a strategy for Avonmouth to be the waste handling capital of the west of England.
The world.
Well, quite probably. You know, he was over in China and I can imagine we'll be getting a few boats full of their waste.
I did wonder that why Britain seemed to want to have the world's nuclear waste as well. I mean, we did that with Sellafield, didn't we? The reprocessing plant. So all these nuclear power stations from all over the world were just sending all their spent nuclear fuel, horrible stuff, incredibly dangerous, to us. It seems like Bristol might even be joining it, not necessarily nuclear. But look, we've got David Ord there and Terence Morden, these two are merchant venturers, as George Ferguson was. So what's the feeling you've picked up in Avonmouth about whether this was just a little deal done in amongst the old slave traders?
Well, between Ord, Mordaunt and Ferguson, it's almost like a skull and bones, crossbones club, you know. It's though we're owned in Avonmouth. They seem to operate above the law. They have a duty of care to their tenants, which they don't care. You know, we've been poisoned by carcinogenic wood dust. We're poisoned by coal dust. We're covered in flies. There's probably asbestos flying about. I've got a measurement device in my garden currently, which has taken 4 years to beat the council around the head enough for them to actually test what's in the dust that's been falling on us. They do admit we've got a problem, but up until this point, they would not even give us a breakdown of this.
What about your local Avonmouth councillors? Any good?
Well, we got rid of Councillor Harvey because he had a massive conflict of interest. As non-executive director of the port, he should have flagged up the massive fly issue that Boomerco were generating on the dock and Churn Gold and EGNI. He should have also flagged up the fact that Boomerco were polluting local residents with ground-up carcinogenic wood dust, which he didn't. As local councillor, he also had that that responsibility to the people, which he basically didn't progress anything. We had to beat him. So we still got Matthew Malias, who's Charlotte's other hoppo. Now, Matt, I'm not really best buddies with him, shall we say, because he's done absolutely nothing apart from sow the seeds of division within the Avonmouth community to profit the port and Business Link West. The other councillors we now have are Councillor Donald Alexander. Don's okay, I suppose. However, he does sit on two committees that are both merchant committees. You've got he's part of the Docks Benevolent Fund. He sits on that committee, and also the Downs Committee is one of his others. He also works for a charity which benefits the munificence of the Quartet Foundation.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I mean, the thing is, we often miss this, but in a way, the Merchant Venturers were set up as a kind of people that ran the port back in the mid-1500s. And many times over the years, they were called up saying, well, basically, you've got this monopoly. You're fleecing people as they come in and out of the city. You're actually damaging the city because although your friends you give nice rates to when they want to bring their ships in and out, you're actually excluding a lot of people who you aren't personal friends with. So it gives them a kind of a big advantage. Look, getting down to more recent and specific stuff, what about this company, the Day Group, which seemed to have taken over, where Boomerco, who were these waste people taking this stuff over to Sweden, has that whole job and contract or whatever been taken over by Day Group, or are they doing something different on the same site?
No, it's the same site. Now, the Day Group were lessees of Bristol City Council. Yeah. Now, Bristol City Council were also... they owned the site until George sold it, along with the Portland. And to answer your earlier question, personally, I think we were undercharged by at least 10 times. Yeah, we should have had £100 million at least for that land, because it's going to skyrocket. Anyway, Boomerco were on the Day Group site, which is literally 10 yards from my back door. And they were grinding up recycled wood from local authority sites, etc. Now, Boomerco were forced by the Environment Agency to move down to the Chittenden Estate, which got rid of their wood dust operation. They then expanded their RDF, refuse-derived fuel, operation on the dock, which is where we got our third load of fly infestations, which Councillor Harvey didn't deal with. So that site was then marked empty. The Day Group applied for a lawful use of land certificate back in 2012, 2013. I think it might have been 2014. And they sat on it for a couple of years. They will be or are planning to process incinerator bottom ash, which is the outfall from a lot of the energy from waste facilities that are being built around the country. There's about 100 of them by people like Veolia or Veolia, etc. And that's what they're planning to do on the same land that the Environment Agency had to move Boomerco from because they were polluting us with dust and nothing that no framework that the Environment Agency could place upon them could stop them from polluting us because they were that close.
Also, planning, permitted development rights, certificates of lawful use. Now, we all know that, for example, if a farmer wants to put a barn in a field, it's not too horribly complicated for him because they've got these things called permitted development rights. They don't need to apply specifically for planning permission for their barn. They can just put it up and the cows have got somewhere to go out the rain. But you've got something similar going on over on the docks, haven't you, with the Day Group deciding that they have got permitted development rights to essentially build a big warehouses.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, for every development for the last 15 years, it would seem, and on the docks has been passed by as a permitted development, which is under Part 8, Class B of the Town and Country Planning General Permitted Development England Order 2015.
Okay, well, that's very specific, very good. And this is the planning law. I mean, it can sometimes seem very boring, but actually it governs our lives to a tremendous amount. Say if you want to put like a little... you know, almost a gazebo in your garden. You know, you are told, well, you've got to get planning permission for all these things. You know, if it's a small extension or whatever, even things like aerials on the roof are supposed to have planning permission. You have to apply for it. Someone sits and decides yes or no. Sometimes, you know, it's impossible to know why, but you're just told, no, you can't do it. Now, I mean, have you looked into whether they really are allowed to just keep building and building however much they want?
I have indeed. When I got wind that they were planning to put this massive superstructure next to my house, which would block the light in a road called Richmond Terrace, which is the opposite side of the railway lines, it would cover us in toxic and carcinogenic dust. I looked into permitted development. Now, in the permitted development of a dock, pier, harbour or water transport, the organisation can build without applying for planning permission things like showers, conveyors, etc. to move stuff from ship to shore. Yeah. However, it does not give them the permission to build industrial developments. So any form of processing, etc., that's not what it's about.
So what is this thing they're building and how big is it?
It's an incinerator bottom ash recycling facility. So everything that comes out of incinerators that drops through the bottom grate is then sent to the day group, who will recycle that and turn it into aggregates for roads, etc., and building concrete blocks for buildings. And that's what they're planning to do with it. It's absolutely huge.
Is it toxic, this stuff? I mean, I imagine it is.
Highly toxic.
So it comes out of the bottom of an waste incinerator?
Yes.
And what do they do to it in this big factory next to your house?
The Environment Agency class it is inert, yeah, and non-hazardous. I would challenge that, because if you dropped it in your fish tank, your fish will go belly up in about 4 seconds flat, and if you licked it, you'd be following them. It contains heavy metals, it contains carcinogens, you've got hydrogen sulfide, which will leak out as part of a gas. You've got methyl mercaptan and dimethyl sulfide are three of the gases that will leach out of that bottom ash. They're explosive. They're fatal. They stink like rotten cabbage, which promises to be wonderful.
So how far are they down the road to building this place that they haven't got planning permission for?
Well, hopefully, as of Monday, Bristol City Council, I put a question into Marvin through our local councillor, which was answered on the 13th of September, stating that everything was fine. They had all the requisite permissions that they required, and don't worry, it's not poisonous. I took issue with this and contacted the planning enforcement officer, and I forwarded him a letter that I got hold of between the North Area Planning Manager, Paul Chick, who was Angelo Calabresi's immediate line manager or supervisor for North Bristol planning applications. Now, Angelo Calabresi gave the lawful use of land certificate.
So it's a certificate of lawful use. So this is basically when a business or a farmer or anybody is either before or after a development is thinking, well, I don't want there to be any problems with this, with the planning system. They can go and they can get a certificate of lawful use, and that says, actually, you don't need planning permission for this. And
That's not correct.
No? Okay.
Lawful use of land certificate is from the change of use between uses of a land, yeah? So if it's residential development and you're moving it to a business development, is that a lawful use of that land? And that's what that certificate says. It's okay to do that kind of activity on the
land.
So
Day Group have got their right bit of paper that they need to get on with it?
No. What they have is they have a bit of paper that enables them to say that if planning permission was granted, they could process that kind of waste on that dock. There's a key thing, is they still have to go through planning process. Now, I put a complaint into the planning inspectorate, and on Monday he issued a PCN, planning a contravention notice to the Day Group, which gives them 21 days to respond. Now, they're still able to build in the meantime, but the very fact of him issuing a PCN, they're not allowed to issue a PCN unless they strongly suspect that a planning anomaly has occurred, shall we put it.
Fascinating. Well, I mean, it's interesting. Ultimately, they might have to pull the building down again.
Absolutely. Exactly. If you were building a wall, there's some guy shot one of the planning officers a few years back because he was instructed that he had to take down his house. I don't know if you remember, it was in the news. You know, they're not shy of wielding a pen, council officers, and they can tell them to take it down, and that's what Avonmouth residents want them to do.
And so what's the relationship like with this Day Group? Do you ever see any of them, or are they just the other side of the barbed wire?
They've had one event, which I didn't make it to. We asked them a bunch of questions, which they didn't answer, and we've not heard from them since. I understand there will be another event at some point reasonably soon, but they're expecting to open next month.
It does sound to me as if Avonmouth has turned from a sort of nice, friendly port where lots of people work, it provides employment for people, into a place which is, the barbed wire is there to keep prying eyes out because there's dodgy stuff going on, rather than as a kind of security, or maybe to stop people getting in and stealing things. This is just really to keep people away from dodgy activity that's going on.
The docks do quote that they need to be secure, etc., but then they do let the public on the dock every time they want to fill up one of the luxury liners that pulls into the dock to pick passengers up and make them some money in demurrage.
What about the flies? Do the luxury liners ever have to cope with the flies and all the toxic waste, for example, coming out of the processing plant that they might be building in the future? They hope to, anyway.
Well, I mean, I personally wouldn't be myself planning to go from Avonmouth if I was had a couple of £1,000 to spend on a good holiday. That would not be my start.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, if someone's on a cruise or something, I would have thought they'd be rather disappointed to disembark at the docks there.
It's a hole. But we want more of that kind of stuff in Avonmouth rather than the dirty industries that George Ferguson and his cronies have got planned for us.
Well, what about community activity, Ian, in Avonmouth? You know, are there groups, people that are actually on the ground actually doing stuff, something about this? Obviously you are, and others are too, I imagine.
Absolutely. We've got the Avonmouth Community Action Group. I'm one of the members of that, and there are 118 of us there, and we are for direct action, for turning up at council meetings and shouting at people and asking questions and writing letters.
And why has it come to this, that you need to be doing that? Surely the whole point of councillors that are elected is they should be doing that kind of thing. They should be making sure that you don't need to get everybody together, get it, you know, all get down to the city centre and charge into a council meeting or whatever.
Indeed. And to be fair, with the two new councillors that we have, Joe Sargent and Don Alexander, they do seem to be a different breed from local councillors that we've had before, which tend to be port people.
As someone that knows the area very well, lived there for a while, a lot of people think, well, we will avoid Avonmouth. There's nothing much to go to see there. So what would you say there is to go to see?
Avonmouth is a very beautiful little village. It's kind of been swallowed up by the port, but, you know, we had a Victorian bandstand. We've got some great architecture. There are a lot of friendly people down here. We've got good pubs.
Isn't there a giant bus station or old bus station or something?
That's right, yes.
Has anything happened to that? It's been there for centuries, it seems.
Being left to rot. I mean, there are a number of us within the community that are trying to get them restored. They have planned permission to build some flats or something behind it, which the developer hasn't taken up yet. We've got, you know, the local toilets we're trying to bring back into service. There's a real strong community in Avonmouth, and you know, we're working class people. We understand industry's got to happen, but it should be a partnership, and it shouldn't be you're just going to have it, to be quite frank.
So how do people connect up with the community in Avonmouth then?
We've got Facebook, the Avonmouth Community Action Group. Do a search, ask to join, and we might let you if you live in Avonmouth. And there's also the Avonmouth Dust Forum, which is a sister organisation. More tea and biscuits than us, but they're also available on Facebook.
Okay, so it's pretty much all Facebook, is it?
Generally, yeah. We are on Twitter as well, lurking about, if you'll spot us.
And you can follow them on Twitter. Okay, Ian, thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
Thank you.
That's all for this week, Dialect's Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. If you're online, you could subscribe to our emails or download it from Dialect Radio, one word, .co.uk. thanks very much to Kenyon Gibson, US Naval Intelligence veteran, giving some insight into whatever happened to DERA, the Defence Evaluation Research Agency, which was based mostly in Wiltshire, Malvern and in the North Downs, just south of London. Also, thanks to Ian Robinson from Avonmouth. And thanks to studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialects of Bristol Broadband Co-op production. Catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Get in touch through the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, just off Jamaica Street, on 0117 909 6897. Or if you want to volunteer more generally, either in Bristol or wider across the country, it's Volunteering Bristol. That's one word, volunteerbristol.org.uk. Or the national volunteering website, do-it.org. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
and the tourists are gone. And you've thrown away your choice and lost your ticket, so you have to stay on. But the drumbeat strains of the night remain, and the rhythm of the newborn day. You know, sometime you're bound to leave her, but for now you're gonna stay. In the year of the cat, year of the cat.
Yes, you fellas, listen to me. Got something to tell you. I want you to listen to every word and govern yourself accordingly. Now pay attention. You see these girls with these fine diamonds and fox furs and fine clothes? Well, Jack, they're looking for a husband. And you're listening to a man that knows.
They done hook!
They ain't fooling. And if you fool around with them, you're gonna get yourself a schooling. If she saves your dough and won't go to a show,
beware, brother, beware.
And if she's easy to kiss and never resists, be careful.
Beware, brother, beware.
And if you go for a walk and she just listens while you talk,
look out,
she's trying to hook you. And if nobody's looking and she asks you to taste her cooking, don't do it, don't do it. And if you go to a show and she wants to sit in the back row,
bring her down front.
Right,
bring her right down front. And if you go for a snack and she wants a booth in the back, watch her. She's trying to hook you. And listen. If she's used to caviar and fine silk, and when she goes out with you, she wants a hot dog and a malted milk. She's been used to going to Carnegie Hall, and when you take out nightclub, and she wants to hear one meatball.
That's all.
If she grabs your hand and says, "Darling, you're such a nice man."
Beware,
I'm telling you.
Now,
listen to me. You think he's listening to me?
Yeah, he's listening.
You better listen to me. I'm telling you what's being put out. You better pick up on it. Now listen to this. If a sister calls you brother, you better get further. I'm telling you.
You better hit her.
You better hit her. And if she's kind of wild and she said, "Darling, please give me a trial." Don't do it. Don't be weak. Don't give it to her. If she looks up in your face and just melts into place,
let her
melt. Forget it. You think he's paying attention to her? Should I ask him about
it? Everything.
Tell him everything. Okay, I'll tell him. Listen. If she calls you on the phone and she says, "Darling, are you all alone?"
No.
Tell her no. You got three girls with you. Don't pay no attention to women. Stand up for your rights.
That's right. Be a man.
That's
Superman.
Right. Should I tell him about
everything?
Well, listen. This is very important. If you turn out the light and she don't fight,
that's all.
That's all. That's the end. It's too late then. She got you hooked. You just well to stick with her. Put on that race to the farm and pay attention to me. Now, listen. If you get home about 2 and you don't know what to do and you pull back the curtain and the whole family's looking at you, get your business straight and set the date. And don't be late. Gate. So, brother, beware!